Right, before Crocker gets here, let's see if his microphone is actually that bad. No, it's not. It must be his voice, not mine. And what about my one? Does my one work? Yeah, it does as well. Cool. Welcome to the 117th JBST.com Smartcast, released for July 2013. This is the multi-sport podcast for triathletes, duathletes, sportive riders, road racers,
time trialists, runners, mountain bikers and fitness enthusiasts.
Whatever your
distance
and whatever
your event,
this
podcast
aims
to make
you
smarter
and
faster.
So, thank you for downloading this 117th episode. I'm Martin Crocker, and I'm joined today by...
Joe Beer. Hello, everyone.
Yes, hello. That's about as funny as we can ever be, Crocker, right there.
I think so.
Yeah, right there. So, we are in Tour de France time. It is July. It is July the 1st. It's well underway. There's already been... Various shenanigans, coaches getting stuck underneath finish banners.
Gantries and...
crashes.
Galore.
Very interesting course. I like the scenery, I must say. It looks like a great place. And, of course, it's the Tour. Everything seems to happen and be just exciting. I mean, they could... You know, and then there was that dog that ran out that almost...
I've never seen a small dog move so fast and tuck its back legs in so quick. You could just see him going, oh, breathing. Boy, he got away with that.
Yes. So we are very eclectic this week, aren't we? We're going to do a nice eclectic mix. We're not going to bore your eyeballs out by one hour and 30 minutes of drivel. We'll just do 45 minutes of drivel.
Yeah, we'll cram it down. There'll be something for everyone.
So
we like Glastonbury, aren't we? Got something for everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that a good analogy?
So, we were, remember, just before the last time, we were talking about Wimbledon. And for people not in the UK, you know, it's one of the more popular 70.3s. There's a lot of middle distance races now. It's part of the, you know, the Ironman M Dot series. So it's got a, how many years do you reckon it's got behind it? Maybe six.
Oh, I was going to say
five or 6 years at Wimbledon. It's got to be minimum. Once again, Exmoor, which is a higher area than anywhere around, proved its worth to be a challenge because as it ended up, even though it was in June, it ended up being
utterly freezing and miserable.
Yes, so it rained and was it an onshore that day? Was it an easterly? I can't remember what it was, but it was certainly there was wind and rain and a few people got caught out. I think, you know, we see the pictures in the magazines of people in tri-suits and sometimes people are okay and sometimes they're not. And there was a few, you know, hypothermic cases. It was a challenge in 70.3. It takes longer because it's a hilly event. Mm. If you want to do a demanding one that afterwards gives you a feeling what a very hard course is like, that's the one. So yes, even in June, races in the UK can be cold. Mm. What's the second rule of Fit Club, Crocker? I'm trying to try and mouth it to him. Never get
old.
No, cold.
Do you know, when you said Wimbledon, I thought, I swear he meant Wimbledon. Sorry,
yeah. I saw Andy Murray. Did you see him today? That was a cracking game, that.
No.
Yeah, nice.
Didn't see
nice. He was pushed, but not much. Anyway, back onto multi-sport rather than...
So well done to all the guys at Wimbledon.
And all the 70.3s and Ironmans that have been thus far, because there's been a lot of
them. I was just going to say, through the friends that I have that are doing them, there's everything going on, and it just seems to have just exploded and gone bonkers.
Yeah.
And everybody's jetting off to
Austria. Austria was yesterday.
I had a friend doing that as well.
I had a a handful of clients doing that.
Oh, good on.
And that was where I printed off those splits for you. So this is the first. I just think it's awesome when you look at, go to Ironman Austria, look at the winner's time. You know, okay, people have been under 8 hours quite a few times, but then you realise how fast Andreas Rehlert ran. You know, a 2:40 and 7 seconds, if I'm not wrong. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, 2:40 and 7 seconds. You realise there was a 5K in the middle. What did we read? There was a 5K.
At the 27K point.
That's right.
27K to 32.3,
yeah.
He ran a 3:37K.
Average
For that 5K. So an 18.09
for 5K in the middle of the, you know, having biked, what was average bike speed? Was it 25 miles an hour? Was it 40 clicks?
Well, he worked out, yeah, 39.9.
Yeah, so 25 miles an hour.
That's not a bad. I think a lot of guys should be happy to do that.
A lot of people just, you know, to do 1 hour and to go under the hour. And he's done, you know, 112 miles after swimming a 44.25. See, I mean, just to do, it's amazing, isn't it? Just to do one of those, not even on its own, just do a component of it. Say, okay, why don't you pick, you know, a quarter distance of that?
Yeah.
Okay, that means, you know, you have to therefore ride for 1 hour at 25 miles an hour, or you have to swim what is basically, you know, very roughly, you know, 950 meters and swim it in 11 minutes. And then you have to run. I mean, 2:40. That's a half in 1:20. So that's a 10K. He's running 40-minute 10Ks, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah. So you know, I would say there's benchmarks. 40-minute 10K. The hour for 25 miles. And I don't know in swimming what the benchmark would be. It'd be sort of an 800-meter time of, you know, maybe it's 800 in under 10 minutes. But any of those individual quarters would be mega, and he's putting them back to back, and to run that 2:40 is just stunning.
Well, I was looking, it says his overall rank in the swim was sixth, his overall rank in the bike ride was fourth, and then he pieced it all together to be the fastest in the run.
Wow.
Come in. But yeah, absolutely, that's fantastic to kind of to see it on paper, because I mean, it's all well and good saying that someone's gone sub 8 hours for an Ironman, but I don't think you really appreciate how fast it is until you break it down into its individual components.
Yeah. So, and individual speeds, and say, 25 miles an hour.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And,
like, and that's grabbing fuel. I don't know the exactness of the course, but there's probably, do they list as, is transitions at the very bottom. I don't know whether I got them on there. I don't know whether sometimes they list the transitions at the very bottom.
T1 swim to bike is 2:44.
Yeah.
And T2 bike to run is 1:55.
Right. So no, even those are not hanging around when you look at how long they've got to run and so forth. And just stunning, you know. It's always that as a fast swimmer, there's always, you know, a fast biker, but when somebody can then put
all this on
the run, which is the race of truth, really, who can actually hold it together. Because lots of people, you know, I had one text from somebody that, you know, held it together for 30K and the 10K, just, you know, you say somewhere between 20 and 30K in an Ironman is the truth time. That's when it starts to kick in. Okay, how much have you paced, judged, fed and got the training right to do it? But, you know, for him to actually, okay, he ran a bit faster early on, but still to be holding together some amazing splits by the end. You kind of think, blimey, he had a bit of a buffer to second place as it was, so he didn't, you know, and yet he still broke 8 hours. Just stunning. Absolutely fair stunning. Dues. Fair dues. Yeah.
Fair dues.
Yeah. Andreas, if you're out there, Martin says, fair dues.
Fair dues, sunshine.
Yeah.
No, well,
and then we've got Ironman Roth coming up in 2 weekends' time. Ooh, might be one weekend by the time you listen to this, and that'll be, you know, that's the super fast course there. And we've got a competition, haven't we?
Well, yes.
Yes.
We've decided that we'll do what we do pretty much every year. I think we've done it for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But it's prediction time.
Prediction time.
Prediction time.
just overall winner. That's what we decided.
Overall winner. Overall Tour winner. De France. Tour not de France. Wimbledon. Tour de France.
And Tour de France, 2013.
2013, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to stretch it out to 2014. Stick
your neck out, Joe. Come on.
Stick my neck out.
We don't get prizes, but...
No. Well, first of all, let's say that it's competition rules at the website. It is a case of there will be three people, and if somebody doesn't get it, just in case there's a... You know, some unlikely happening that somebody, you know, is
going to have a rollover.
But, you know, almost like the first person to get the closest to it.
Yeah.
We've got one of these very nice power bar. Limited edition Tour de France musettes in a. What would you call that? Is that like a nylon?
Yeah.
Or polyester? Yeah.
That'll do.
Yeah, that'll do.
And in yellow.
Put some bottles and some gels and so forth in there. No crash equivalents given. Take it or leave it, all right? That's the way it is.
That's what you have in.
That's what you have in, and there's no other comeback.
No. Go on then, Joseph. Come on.
Right, predictions. I'm going to say, much as I wouldn't have thought you'd hear me say this, I wonder whether... He says, rolling it out in his brain. I don't know. I don't want to say it, but I think it could. Okay, mountain biker.
Cadel Evans.
Yes, there we go.
Peter Sagan. Are you mental?
No, I just think he could. I would like to see him. He's got to be getting near the end of his career. He's got to be.
He's almost there now.
Yeah, and I just think maybe he's got the experience that nobody else. Nobody else that's come up through the ranks clean. There's some that have come back that have been doped and they never seem to be the same again. So I think Cadell's the only one of the kind of the hardcore era that was clean that could beat the current up and comers. And there's some heck of a good riders that are chomping at the bit. Mm. But I just wonder. I wonder whether this is his year, because he's done pretty well and he's a fighter and an all-rounder, and he's got the experience more so than anybody else that has yet to win across the whole field.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he's won it before just maybe give him the edge. Who would I go for? We're recording this now, and I think it's, you know, stage three is just finished.
Yeah, let's just say it's the 1st of July, so yeah. We're not recording this. So by the time Henry gets this out, it could be weeks.
We could be on to 2014. Who am I going to go for?
I don't think silence is very good on the podcast,
no,
Martin.
I know.
I'll carry on then. Other news? Oh, yeah, Martin's got toothache. He was telling me all about that. Well, I'll cross that off the list. There we go. I'll give him his time to...
There's no one that stands out. And a little part of me just wants to say Chris Froome, but I just mentally don't... I don't know whether he's going to be strong enough. And I'll tell
who he is. I don't want 182 riders that you don't think are going to win. I want the one that you do want to win. Right, I'm going to go to news.
I don't know.
No, right, carry on.
I'll have a think.
Right. A piece of 2009 research. This was from the Journal of Sports Science and Medicine. For those that are interested, that is www.jssm.org. And this was a very interesting study on elite mountain bikers and the effects on sodium phosphate loading on these 19 mountain bikers. I guess cut to the chase, sodium phosphate affects the oxygen delivery. There's been plenty of research done on low to moderate fitness individuals, and the effects have been fairly positive. This group were a very elite group. They give the specific statistics of the riders, and when you've got things such as a 5 litre VO2 max, which equates to 73 millilitres per kilogram, for those that have had a VO2 max test and they've come out at 45, 55, 65, for this lot was 73 at the start of the study. And also peak power of 400 watts, which is, you know, solid. It's pretty solid considering their mass, if I could work it out, I'm trying to work out their mass. Compared to, you know, a lot of riders that might be bigger, these lot aren't exactly massive, therefore they've got very good power and also VO2 max. They loaded up on this for a week and also a subsequent 3 weeks with a new regime that's now out. And firstly, when they loaded, it pretty much added on close to a third of a litre of extra oxygen at their VO2 max. So they just got extra oxygen when they did a max test. Their threshold was around about 15 watt increase. So you consider that, that's, you know, 15 watts is a good improvement. Max power went up about 10 watts, very roughly. But also they had a control group that didn't know what they were taking, and they actually didn't increase significantly their max power. The max power was down slightly, as was the threshold, but then, you know, that's just sometimes maxes go up and down a bit. Just because somebody's max power goes down 10 watts, that could just be that day. But the fact that significantly the group after a week, so just 1 week, went up 15 watts at their threshold. But also that they just their VO2 went from 73 up to 77. And then another 3 weeks later, it was maintained. They were still doing the extra 15 watts at threshold, and their VO2 had still gone up to 5.4 litres. So, you know, in elite athletes that are already well-trained, over a month, they maintained this extra form.
So, in layman terms, in Joseph...
Oui?
Sodium phosphate.
Yes.
Let's talk its property. What has it done? What's it supposed to do, like you said?
It affects the 2-3 DPG. There you go. No.
Yeah, but if you're not on the internet.
it seems to, if you like, let go of the oxygen more readily when it gets to the muscle. There's still, it doesn't sort of drop all the oxygen at the muscle. There's still regulators at the muscle telling, if you like, the blood, or telling the oxygen equation how much needs to go through. And this seems to push it in the favour of just sort of almost offloading more oxygen as the muscles, I guess, are being limited by how much oxygen they can get. This actually almost kind of like lets them have more of it.
Ah, right. Okay.
By, you know, artificially changing the 2-3 DPG. And it is quite quite good to get contemporary research on elite athletes done, you know, double blind, placebo controlled, and in this instance going on for a month, and actually saying, yeah, look, this showed, because the ones that were on the placebo didn't know they were on it. They were just, you know, everyone was taking the same stuff, but when they're retested, they don't get the benefits. And 3 weeks later, again, they don't get the benefits. And because they're elites, you can't imagine that somehow all of the group that were on the placebo all decided that for that month they were going to not try and improve.
Yeah.
You know, who doesn't want to be 15 watts better in a month's time? So, I just thought, as it was something that I'd missed it, and then in searching for something recently, went back through a paper trail of research and found this one. I went, oh, I haven't seen that one, and just thought, actually, that puts. There are some studies that show that it doesn't work. They're in favour of it. This is one of those supplements. They say, look, this does work, but there's always, I think, a sense that you want, you know, you don't want to just say, oh, one study's found it, that must be good. But sometimes when you get a contemporary one that's done really well, you think, great, that suggests that it works. And it's a very high level supplement. It's you know, it's not for the 1 hour 10K runner. You know, it's for people that are already doing a high level of training. They've got, you know, great equipment. They look after their body. They're a fairly low, you know, lean level, and they're looking for that extra bit. Okay?
Very good, yeah.
Right. Have we got Tour de France prediction now then?
I'm going to go Chris Froome then.
Okay.
Someone's got to do it.
Okay. So we don't win.
But you could. Yeah. So how will the guys enter?
I think the best way to do it is to do it via email.
Via email.
Because tweets can get lost, but emails are far easier. So go to jbst.com. So you can click on your link from... you can do it from within, like when you're on your iPod, you can click on that, can't you? And your iPhone, and it'll jump to the website. Or you just go jbst.com, click the contact top right, and then just fill out your details. And we will have one that says enter podcast competition. Tick the box, put your options in, and Bob's your uncle. You two could have one of these three lucky prizes.
This is it.
Terms and conditions apply.
Please see website for details.
Okay. Yeah. What do you know? What is the secret? I know you told me something before, but you can't tell me.
But I can't tell you.
No, can't say. But what else can you tell me? What's going down?
The future is looking extremely bright.
Is it looking extremely electronic?
Everything's looking electronic. Even some of that. Well, a lot of the guys would have seen it already, but Altegra have had a little bit of a facelift for next year.
Bar end shifters?
Well, I'm talking 11-speed manual at the minute.
Oh, right. I was thinking electronic. Just
well, the electronic stuff will be here as well. So, yeah, that's quite good. I see some...
11-speed.
Where's it going to stop? Where is it going to stop?
Well, we'll be here in 25 years' time, saying, and it got 29-speed now on one block. Mind you, it's a really thin chain.
Yeah, it's run on wire. And I've seen some exciting stuff from... another brand which looks really good.
Thanks, Martin. That's really good. You're full of secrets, aren't you? Another brand's really good that I can't tell you about.
Yeah, I can't tell you about.
I saw something the other day. X-Lab have brought out. Have you seen their torpedo bottle?
I have seen it. Yes.
I sent you a link.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately I didn't look at.
Okay.
But I had seen it. Had seen it on a.
This is the one that's got a little whale fin. That you pull the straw down and it holds the straw.
That's right, yeah.
Because you don't want the straw flicking up and being in the wind because it's a round tube and it'll be an aero. So this one, you pull it back down and it stays out of the way. But it makes you wonder what pulling back down with your hand is going to do for aerodynamics. And Profile have got one. Have you seen that one? Profile's aero bottle with a black nose on it, and even the computer mount is kind of made into an aero shape.
I don't know whether I've seen that one.
It's a new... Is it called like the missile or something like that? Just come out. But you know, they're getting this horizontal bottle between the bars just seems to have now come to the court. Yeah, and I wonder whether we might, I don't know what the longest time trial is this year in the tour, whether we're going to see or whether they're allowed to mount a bottle between the hands, because there's some funny rules now being in place. You know, they've got to have horizontal hands on the time trial bars. They can't have... You know, the Landis Leipheimer position. No, that's what we see a lot of them now have gone. When you first see them, you think, oh, they've changed their position. There was a guy who's the Australian time trial champion that rides on a Scott, and his arm position has changed, but it's so that he can have flat arms. So, yeah, they can't. Their forearm has to be flat.
Fun police out again.
Fun police, yeah. Hello, UCI fun police.
Oh, no, I couldn't possibly. You couldn't possibly go fast doing that. So, oh well. But there'll be no deep section wheels soon.
Thanks, Martin. I want one of your more information isn't more informed.
I told you that. Anything you need, you give me.
Anything you need, yes. So what else? So we know things are going electronic. We know things are going more carbon. And I've seen also there's more and more sports nutrition things where they're putting more and more caffeine in. Have you seen that? Starting to get higher and higher levels.
Just all that's going to happen is people are going to be doing sport, get to the finish and carry on going, and no one ever remember what they've done. That might just be the effects of caffeine on me. But I don't know. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know.
You don't remember. You get to the finish line, you don't remember what you've just done.
No. Which I'm, well, fair dues. If it works, it works, I suppose. But
this must be what it's like for Ricky Gervais to talk to Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, but which way are we talking? what else do I know? I don't really know a lot else. It is this little lull that you get before, you know, the internet is absolutely bombarded with the new stuff, which literally comes from America, which then comes out early, which then everybody in the UK wants and can't get anything until the start of next year.
Yeah.
So
I've seen a new disc online. I've definitely seen a new disc online. And I saw, what else did I see? There was a different helmet or something or other that, you know, it's now that the Tour and some of the top Ironman races and some of the top ITU races, they start feeding out some extra gear.
That's right.
And sometimes they don't even really make much of it. And somebody, you know, a photographer will just snap a picture and go, hold on a minute, that's new, or that's not the right logo. And then they look into it and find that somebody's using, you know, most of the time they're already on 2014, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're using, you said you'd seen stuff from companies already that are next year.
That's right.
And it's amazing that we're halfway through the year at the Tour de France and already the newer stuff is being...
And I know a couple of the Orica boys are on some of the new Scots and everything anyway, so... it's quite interesting so far. It's been pretty good.
Okay. I think it was a response to somebody. They didn't send a direct email in, but I spoke to somebody who said, I listened to the podcast. What was that about high intensity that you spoke of a while back? And I just wanted to kind of reiterate about that high intensity training is kind of very potent and very specific. And if you do it right, and you see how effective it can be, it's only when you couple it with having the right technical other sessions or not overly massive endurance sessions. I think if you're doing really high intensity intervals, that isn't normally coupled with people doing, you know, 4 hour sessions on top of that. Mm. Okay, there are some people that's a very, you know, 4 hours is their standard long ride. Okay, well, they've got to be very talented, fairly young, and doing a long distance race if 4 hours is bread and butter to them, and they don't say 4 hours is a little bit of a... Do you know what I mean? There's some younger people I coach, and that's their bread and butter. But other people do 4 hours and go, cool, that's taking the steam out of me, and they're not going to be up for doing a very high intensity session 2 days later. When you look at the research, most of the time it's looking at something very specific and then controlling people on the other days.
Yeah.
And that's the key, is to control people and keep the level of exertion down, which most of the time, if you're doing the high intensity right, you don't want to go hard because you can't. Or how you notice you've got it wrong is you do some intervals, then you get feisty and do some harder riding, and the next time you come back around to do the intervals, you can't deliver the power. It's like, right, okay, you're doing too much in between.
It is difficult because it is addictive, because the problem is you see the results that come from high intensity. Of course, immediately...
You feel faster.
Yeah. Feel faster. And all you want to do is just go, right, I need to do more. If I can do more, then surely that means I get quicker, I get stronger.
Mm.
But what makes it work so well is the fact that you don't overload yourself, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it's very subtle. Yeah. It's not suddenly bashing yourself at, you know, over 90% of max when up to that point you've done a little bit of threshold around 85, 86, 87%, and then you bash yourself at 90% of max only to almost do a race in effect, because that's into the race zone. When you get into the red zone, that's racing. Whereas some intervals people do are below racing.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's kind of a soft way of doing it. You might be better not to do that at all and to pick your races to bring your form on.
That's right.
And also pick intervals in between the races. And it is that thing, oh yeah, but such and such is doing that session, and such and such is doing that session. Think, if you do everybody else's quality sessions, you aren't even going to be stood up at the end of the week, let alone getting better over a course of weeks and months. And I think it's almost like you've got to dip in and do a set of intervals that gradually, you know, build towards something, and you give it a fairly gentle process of progress. Because if you can deliver it and say, yeah, that's faster than I can, and typically you're looking at about there was a study recently and they reckon about 90% heart rate max for about half an hour, but there again, that was kind of not young, but younger people, if somebody's, you know, a 50-year-old triathlete, they probably are limited to 2 high-intensity sessions a week and a 3rd one where they're kind of be playing around with speed but not doing flat out. It's very important to get your age, your intervals, and what distance you're doing all coupled together. Because if you don't, you could be doing exactly the wrong training for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. So, I mean, it does work. There is proof that it works, but I think you've got to kind of, you have to choose what you're going to do. And if you're going to do it properly.
Yeah.
And then choose your sessions in between.
And keep it simple. I think the other issue with high intensity is people mix it around too much. They don't sort of say, right, I'll start by doing, 4x5 minutes, and then I'll build to 5x5 and 6x5. Once I'm at 6x5, that's what I want to be my bread and butter session. 6x5 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes recovery between, and do that. Don't then, you know, start to say, oh, what I'll do then is I'll do 6x5. Okay, then I'll do 4x8, and then I'll do, let's do 9x6. And do you know what I mean? Just confuse it. No, if you keep the same amount,
that's it, yeah.
Then you're delivering what should gradually increase in work. You should do more work, maybe slightly quicker reps on the track, or quicker efforts if you're doing between 2 points running or cycling, or just more power. But it's kind of chipping away at that process. You go back the next week and you just try and,
yeah.
You know, if you've got it right, you should be able to deliver it the following week. If you've got it wrong, you can't even get yourself psyched up to go back and do the same thing again. And that's the difference between, you know, getting into the red zone and redlining. Into the red zone means you're pushing yourself hard for anything between 3 and perhaps 6, 7 minutes. And then you can't wait for that couple of minutes recovery and go again. But you don't absolutely do it and think, I don't think I can even do that again next week.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, that really is the icing on the cake, and you cannot keep icing a cake. Okay, you can keep building it, but you cannot keep icing it. You like that, don't you?
I like that.
You like that?
Cake.
Cake. Sorry. I've got one in the house for you. I should have brought it out. When you ramble, if I disappear and come back with a cake, you know why.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
So get it simple. Choose your days when you do it and who you do it with, so that you're not just sort of dropping into a session thinking, oh, what are we doing tonight? Oh, we're doing into us. Oh, I did my quality work last night. You know, you kind of pick what you're going to do and be prepared to say, I've already done my hard work. I can't keep, you know, there's no medals for the person that does 5 hard sessions 1 week, drags themselves through 4 the next, and then the following week they're just absolutely done in. You know, see that. When you must have seen it, like when they have the classically, it's kind of runners that produce their, you know, My Diary when I was at the top or something, and they would have had a Tuesday track session, a Thursday track session, possibly a Saturday race or a Saturday kind of, you know, tempo run. And the other stuff is not high intensity running, and that's the key thing.
Yeah.
Just because they went fast on those days, they didn't go faster on every day. They just picked those days. So you might say, oh, yes, I've got a running track with a group, oh, I can do that Tuesday. I can do my either a high intensity swim Thursday morning or a high intensity bike Thursday evening. Oh, and I'll use Saturday morning for whatever I need to fill in. And that's your 3 hard bits, and the rest are not meant to be hard.
Well, that's the thing as well. And I think sometimes when doing in kind of like the high intensity stuff, you almost have to pick the day you're going to do it on and the day after as well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so the day you're going to do it on, there's no point in it being, oh, so it's one of the heavy days I've got at work, because there's, you know, you're not going to get the quality from the session. So you're almost better off to go, oh, it's an easier day Tuesday. And then Wednesday's my day off. Or, you know, when Wednesday I have a later start, so you can have a little bit more of a rest. So that's what you probably want to look to do, is maybe do it on one of your quieter days, or, you know, do it on an easier day.
Yeah.
And then the following day being either a day off or maybe an even quieter day, or a late start or an early start, and then you can get home and put your feet up.
So yeah. And I think quality work, you know, always has to be done at your level. You can't do somebody else's speed work.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes having other people around you keeps you honest and keeps you doing it. You know, you shouldn't turn every interval session into a race, because you can't race everybody. I mean, that's just the biggest, you know, biggest failure of people that kind of want to be as fast as somebody else, is they try racing them all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Either you're going to chip away at the process and be more consistent and more likely to add, I've worked out, you know, there's something like every session made this particular group like something like point 0.7% each week or something, you know, very, very subtle, but for a lot of hard work. You think, wow, they did 70 minutes of really hard work, and out of that, they got 0.7% better. Yeah?
Yeah.
But it was the other 6 hours that they did easy that was the important bit.
Yeah.
You can't start doing the hard stuff and then go and see what I'm like now. I'll go out with the group that run on a Friday, just see how quick I'm going. You've always got to be using this stuff towards an end goal,
yeah.
Which isn't who am I going to beat next time round.
That's right.
There was one, there's this new phrase now called block periodization, which is the idea where you do quite a lot of high intensity training and then back it off. So you do 1 week with 4 or 5 sessions of high intensity. The next 3 weeks is only one. So you kind of really overload and then back off. And yes, it dudded improvements. And you're talking 2-4% improvement, but it's for a lot of work, and it's just 4, 5, 6 weeks. It's not 40 weeks. And I think for most people, just to have a period of time where they just say, I'm going to, you know, you should have faster sessions, but they don't always have to be flat out sessions.
Yeah.
And then as you use them for tapering to that key event, you can use them as your very high intensity sessions. Or you use races to say, oh yes, I'll use a Saturday park run, or I'll do my own, you know, swim time trial or something. So you still pick fairly regular days, but you use different things with which to bring your form on. And I think the block periodization is something that we're going to find more about and work out how often can you stimulate the muscle, and then how long do you have to back off to see the benefits.
Yeah.
I've got this one that I've just downloaded from SportsMed, and it was not cheap, and I haven't read it, and it's 25 pages, and I can't wait. But it's high intensity interval training solutions and the programming puzzle. This whole idea of how do you get, and they've looked at tons of sort of running studies and cycling studies, what kind of amount of hard work do you have to do for hard work to be useful?
Yeah,
because there's so many theories on what you need to do. And you know, there's the old fashioned, you know, oh yeah, you've got to do, you know, minute on, minute off, and then you've got this idea of what's called T at VO2 max, so the time you spend in intervals at your VO2 max. And so there's loads of people now looking at this and trying to just define what does high intensity training involve. But what you see is a lot of times the pro diaries, research, or even hypothetical research on what the optimum would be, it's all very specific. It's not just, oh, I race random person X and that's my speed work.
Yeah.
It's very right. I would do 3 lots of 8 minutes at 300 watts with a 2 minute recovery, and that's it. And I don't do a fourth and a fifth. If I meant to do three, I do three.
Yeah.
And if it's meant to be at 290, I do 290. I don't start the first one at 320 and then say sod it after number two, I can't do it. I think it's that very subtle, you know, it's that very subtle way of, okay, you're going to have to wait to get the full benefits, but that's the point. You cannot isocate quickly.
No, this is very true. You cannot.
Not that I know.
Can you?
No, I can't. I don't cook.
Yeah, how long did it take you to ice the cake in there?
Oh, they're not iced.
What?
No.
Oh, forget it. I don't want it then. God bless. But no, that'll be an interesting read. I think what people, almost everybody wants is for someone to go, this works. You know, you need
to do. But there are intervals that we know work, and they are as simple as, you know, 6x5, which is half an hour. There's ones that are, you know, the classic 30 seconds maximal, 4.5 minutes off, but you've got to do 12 of them.
Yeah.
And so there are things, but a lot of times they're not done whereby you look at it and it's done over 40 weeks. It's done over 4 weeks, 6 weeks.
Hmm.
So I think you've got to do it hard enough that it takes you up to the very top of zone two into zone three. So you're talking 87 to 90% of max heart rate, but that you can reproduce it, because you don't just want to do it 1 week and then say, oh yeah, I did my Achilles in. You've got to, some people have to do zone two work just to start moving quicker and then eventually get to zone three.
Yeah.
because they're not used to working out quickly. And if they're, particularly if they're doing an impact sport like running, the last thing they should do is say, well, I suppose I better, I've heard about high intensity training, I better do, you know, maximal 800 meter runs, and I better do half an hour's worth of them,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
And just bash their legs to pieces. It's all got to be, it'd be very interesting to see how much the, you know, like elite runners that you see, they did their sessions, and, you know, some of the sessions that they do at the top end are phenomenal. But what were they doing, you know, 5 years before that?
Yeah.
Not, you know, oh, I do these quick set of intervals and it brings your form on. Yeah, but it's also probably, if it brings your form on that quick, it's probably going to be so mentally difficult that you reach that peak and you're done.
And you're done, that's the thing, isn't it?
As opposed to, oh yeah, I do these reps and yeah, I'm running, you know, I'm running above the pace that I could do for an hour. So I'm above my threshold. So it might be the pace that somebody, I'm going to say 10K, but some people take an hour to do 10K. But, you know, you whatever, don't look like that, Martin. Don't look like that.
No, I was just saying, it would be very hilly if it was an hour.
But, you know, this whole idea that if you're going to push yourself above threshold, that should be something that would take you maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes. So if the person taking 30 minutes to ride 10 miles, still, if they're riding that hard, they're above threshold.
Yeah.
Because they can't keep that up and do it for an hour. They could only do that for half an hour. And if you ask them to do 20 miles, it'll take them more than twice as long. So I think there's that whole idea of, so you don't have to be flat out for your intervals. You just got to be going faster than you can sustain for an hour.
Yeah.
And really faster than you can sustain for 40 minutes, so that you are accumulating lactate, but maybe those really hard intervals are left for the few people that can actually tolerate them and have built to the point where they need that last hard bit.
Well, I think that's a bit of a balancing act in itself, is the fact that I think some people do their first session that they've ever done of their high intensity and then go, well, where's the benefits then? And you're like, well, if you're going to keep doing this, you know, it may only be 2 or 3 years down the line when you start being able to hit these big numbers, or your true potential then, because you've built up this kind of resistance and your body's started to go, oh, right, I remember these. And, you know, something that I kind of look back on training, I think I quite enjoy that. I quite enjoy the high intensity bits. But like you said, you need to go into the session with a formula or with, you know, a set session that you're going to do that you know is within your capabilities, but is stretching you.
Yeah.
And regardless of who you are doing it with, it's your session.
Yeah.
You know, it's not their session. You know, you do you want to come down to my running club? Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. What are we doing? Oh, we normally do 400s, or, you know, we do some pyramids of 200, 300, 400, 500 meters, you know, running. And, you know, you just say, well, yeah, that's all right, but would you mind if I just did my 400s? All right. Well, you're not going to hurt anybody. You're still with them for the session, but, you know, or you do their session and you make sure you stick to your times and your figures that you need to do.
Because it's, I think you said it, it's about being able to sort of do it and not just first expect there to be something. So if you do it right, you can start it. You know, there's no problems in doing higher intensity work in the off season. It just cannot be your absolutely maximum highest intensity, because how do you keep doing that and keep doing it and keep doing it? And people think they're doing it, but they're not.
No,
they're not. And the key, what's the key, is to get to your race saying, wow, I've done some really hard training, but I've been on top of it, it's progressed nicely, and I'm right at the peak. You can't be, you know, starting to do that in January and hoping to for that peak to actually come, you know, in May, August, whenever. The last bit really comes about as the fact that you've got used to doing high intensity stuff, but it's not, although it's high intensity work, it doesn't feel like you're absolutely mulling yourself. You see these in the perceived exertion when they report it in these studies. These people are working quite hard, but they're not giving it a 20 out of 20. So they've built up over time. They haven't just gone, oh, I've only got 3 weeks till my next event. Oh, I'm just going to, you know, batter myself. And actually, you're not even going to be ready for it, because you're still going to be suffering from the high intensity. I think if you gradually build volume on the basis that you don't need to go out and immediately do everything at the longest that you've ever done, with the intervals, you want to gradually just get into them. And it doesn't matter if you don't hit zone three to start with, you'll still be moving quicker. If you've got zone one endurance and technical work, and then on top of it, you just start going faster by 10 or 15 beats above that zone, you're certainly going to be into the lactate accommodation area where you're having to deal with it and you can still be efficient. But some people get into zone three, and because they're never really fit enough to do it, it's a waste of time. You should just cancel that out and say, you just need to get used to swimming, biking, mountain biking, whatever, more efficiently. You don't need to ice the cake. You haven't even built the cake. The cake goes off at random directions and does what it wants, if you know what I mean. It just doesn't, you know, you've got to be looking at where you best find that last bit. And if these things even talk about, you know, a relative performance gain of like 3 or 4%, that's nice, but some people have still got loads more technical ability, loads more fitness to get before they start thinking, oh, I suppose I better muller myself. It's so potent, but it's got to be done right.
Yeah, but the problem with it being so potent as well is it can ruin you. That's the thing, isn't it? And all your kind of your winter hard work where you have seen a progression in your fitness and you're thinking, well, I'm getting there. And then, of course, everybody does it. Is I want to get there quicker.
Mm.
That's what I want to do. I want to get there quicker. So you think by chucking in your high intensity and then overloading yourself massively with it, all that ends up is you just go pop. You're not interested in it, and you just go, I don't know why I bothered.
Yeah.
So
if there's a like a sort of what to do this month, just plan what you're going to do this month and the next and the next. Because if you've got something that's, you know, middle end of September, think about how you're going to build to that now. Yeah. Don't sort of, you know, randomly start doing speed work or you know, just bimble along and then at the last minute think, oh, I better do something or other. I think there's a fun aspect to training. Sometimes it's just nice to do things. But really hard intervals don't really happen because you enjoy them. You might enjoy them because you've set yourself to do them and they're part of your week. But it shouldn't be you turn up to a session, somebody says we've got to do super high intense, and you think, oh, well, I did it yesterday, but I suppose I better do it again today. You know, I've reckoned that for every person that does it right, there's probably three people that do it wrong.
Oh, yeah, easily.
And you see it in what they do. And because it's not effective, ironically, they can still keep pushing themselves because they're not absorbing it. Because they're not absorbing it, they aren't actually getting stronger each week. They're just suffering to try and get back to where they were.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do it right, there should be an accumulation. There was a series of studies that I found that every few weeks they tested people and then manipulated what they were going to give them because they sort of got used to it. And it does gradually go up over a series of weeks, albeit subtly. So it showed that even during what they were doing interval-wise, it was still going up, you know, 5 watts and 8 watts here and there. So they were still getting stronger by the fact they got the mixture right. Well, if people can't go back to do what they did last week, and that always keeps happening, one hard session, and then they don't seem to be able to repeat it, then you got to think, perhaps you just overestimated what you could do at the beginning. And instead of going, wow, I did, you know, 4 lots of a mile at 7:30. Wow, next week I'm going to try about 7:20. Fine. You're all right to do it, and there come a point where you go, I'm not going to be able to do that week on week. I think I've just slightly overstepped the mark. That's fine. I like the idea of breakthrough and break even sessions. Sometimes you do have to break through a bit, but every interval session is not breakthrough. And that's what I think the research does very well, is it gives people a set amount of work and says, if you work at 87 to perhaps 91-92% of max, you do half an hour or even 20 minutes of that per week, you're going to get better. And if you get better, don't try and do more of it, because you'll probably not get better, or you'll probably find that that session you thought was easier that you did the day before, day after, was actually too hard.
Yeah.
And that's the flip side. If you do high intensity, you've got to get it in your head that there are low intensity technique days where your ego is totally out. Because if you deliver in the high intensity sessions, who gives a monkey's what you do in the low intensity sessions?
Yeah, well, that's the thing as well, isn't it? So, you know, no one's going to look at your low intensity and go, oh, what's that?
You're a bit slow.
What's that? You'd be like, that doesn't matter, does it? You know, what I did, what I hit in my high intensity, you know, some people might only dream of, maybe, you know.
Lazy athletes are the good ones, the ones that on the day when they don't need to work hard, don't work hard.
Yeah.
They just say, oh, my heart rate was quite low. Is that all right? Yeah, fine. That's the point of that. Not, oh, I felt quite good, so I started doing some harder work. No, you've got your hard work days. You know, make them in bold if you plan it out in a little diary on your phone or whatever, or tell people, I'm going to do it on this day and this day. But on the other day, if you go too hard, just ride off because I'm not interested. Or just do your own running session. I want to do my, you know, aerobic work. And the aerobic work supports the anaerobic work. It isn't a waste of time. It's not junk mileage. You will not find an elite athlete that all they've got is 3, 4, even 5 interval sessions and nothing else. They've got loads of other technique work, loads of other endurance work. So you've got to have that. And the rough proportion is 80-20. So at the most, 20% hard work per week, which for a lot of people just isn't happening. 10% hard work is a lot. For a lot of people, that is a high amount to do consistently time after time.
I mean, that's the thing as well, isn't it? Is to be consistent.
Yeah.
You know, you and you've got to be honest as well, because if you're doing these kind of sessions, there must come to a point when you've done so many where you just go, right, I'm done with it. I can't hit the figures. So there's no point in doing it.
Mm.
There's no point in kind of busting yourself wide open to go, yeah, I just finished that session, I've got another one tomorrow. Mm. Or you're just better off going, I can't do another one of them.
Yeah, once you're into training, unless you are very, you know, unrealistic and don't ever get it done, or, you know, for some reason there are hard gainers, there are people that... You can't make everyone a champion, you know. People that are champions, but they're in a different gene pool.
Mm.
But there are some people that, even though they train, they're limited on the capacity with which they can improve. It's not to say they can't improve, but you don't just say, oh, train harder, do more, and you'll definitely be in the top 15%. It's just not there.
Mm.
So if it's not there, then what's the point?
Yeah,
you know, what's the point in pushing yourself to think, oh, I've got to get there? I think, hold on a minute, it might be better for me just to experience a bit more of that sport, and maybe find that I'm better nutritionally, I'm better tactically in pacing, I'm better, I've got good equipment.
Yeah.
And that won't make up for it, but it will mean that you've got other things with which to look for the gains. Mm. Because I do see that people do hit a ceiling limit. And not everybody this year is faster than they are last year. There must be people that listen to this that sort of say, yeah, I'm not quite up to the numbers I was last year, but I've had a really tough year, or work's been busy, or, you know, got a baby, moved house, whatever. There are reasons why people don't all get faster.
Yeah.
And some people, it's their year and you can just see in their results and it starts and you go, they're on a good year. And in other people, it just doesn't happen. And it's not to say, well, that's it, throw in the towel, you know. You've got to sometimes get the best out of it that you can.
Yeah,
and that might be your building on this year to say, yeah, but if I don't finish this year, you know, December, having gained 6 kilos and having kind of not really, you know, done any sport and been really demotivated, you're certainly not going to start 2014 very well.
No.
So of the long-term game, it's really about endurance is even within what you're doing. That's every right. year yeah, is yeah. an endurance process. And if you've only been doing endurance and you're getting into it, you're like 2 years in, oh, wow. It gets harder as you go longer because your body, you know, your body gets used to doing things, so you have to sometimes mix it up. It's very good at doing something, so you don't have to do quite so much of that. But also, the, you know, the central processor up here in your skull can sometimes find it difficult to get yourself motivated again, particularly if you haven't had the results you thought you were going to get. And I think now is probably, for a lot of people, we're halfway through the year, and it's time to sort of look at the facts on the wall of your races, of your training, of the realism of, are you at where you thought you would be? When we talked back in October, November, December time, like people setting goals and stuff, were you actually realistic? Something completely, you know, sided you that you didn't realise was going to happen. You know, absolutely didn't even know it was coming your way. Yeah. And therefore you say, okay, I'm just going to get done what I can. I'm enjoying it, but I'm not going to have that year that I thought I would. However, I've learnt a few things along the way that are still going to be helpful next year.
That's it.
No, it's not being defeatist,
no.
But you have to be realistic after one. Sometimes some people do have to really look at the numbers and go, okay, so maybe it isn't happening. Okay, see how close you can get to those numbers. Maybe even, you know, do stuff, but try something different to keep it fresh and keep the approach from, you don't want to keep hitting your head against a brick wall,
because
eventually you will give up.
Yeah.
And then you'll just go, oh, I couldn't be bothered with that. So I think you have to, you know, in effect, you have to kind of like agree to, okay, so perhaps I was you know, a bit over optimistic, or I got close, but I'm going to have to build up again now, and lots going on. You know, I'm happy with what I've managed to do, but what you haven't got done, you can't do it.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
You know, whoever's winning the tour this year, well, they didn't win it last year, did they?
No.
So there's going to be a different one there. There's going to be a different person winning different races. There's going to be different club champions and regional champions. It all changes. And I think sometimes people, you know, like their personal level to almost be where it should be. And sometimes it drops. And yeah. You have to just go, okay, you know, not oh, it's July, I'll start my base now because it's pointless doing any more racing. Because that then is really defeatist.
Yeah.
I mean, do something entirely different.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. You have to keep it fresh. If it's not going your way, it's not going your way. You know, it's not like...
I thought you were almost going to give us a golden nugget then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was going to... Well, you can't let them all out, Joe. You can't let them all out. People expect otherwise.
Yeah. Well, but, I thought we were expecting one a session now.
No. Can't give them out like that, Joe. Ugh. They're not free sweets. Can't give them out. Well, if you got them.
I was gonna knock it on the head then. I was thinking, you know, it's July. We don't have, you know, people have got enough high intensity exercise making their brain
go race.
Yeah, go race. Hopefully, there's a couple of things that I will be able to talk about next month. I'm hoping to. Otherwise, really, this was just we're getting back on track. It's beginning of July. We wanted to just say, look, there's our tour competition. We hope you are at least enjoying parts of your season thus far. And if not, you know, it doesn't matter. You cannot always be going faster. Sometimes people are dealing with an insurmountable amount of, crap.
Life issues, crap,
yeah. That just say, look, you could just give it up and then you'd hate it because you love doing this and you've either just got into it or it's always been part of what you do, or it gives you so many positive benefits that aren't necessarily in racing. Fine, that's perfectly fine. But you do have to sometimes adjust, and it may be that that adjustment process is better done now so that the second half of the season up until, you know, the very end, I would draw a line at about October for most people anyway. You just say, well, okay, up to that point, you might even stretch it into October by doing something that isn't the classic sort of summer sports, but there's still time left. Don't then do another set of unrealistic goals, which are just like, oh, golly, why not just set yourself a realistic goal, which you're going to go, yeah, that could have not happened at all, but I got it done. But and the fact that I got it done, and it doesn't have to be something easy, like I got out the front door for 364 days, great, well done. No, it has to be something where it's still a little bit of a stretch, but it's not, you know, to use that phrase, it's not you on a great day. It's just you on a solid day. We say, look, I'm not going to PB all the time. There's been people this year that have sort of PB'd and it's great, but they've now made it harder to get the next one.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what it takes, is to go and do a different thing and go, okay, that's quite good. I've got into that bit of cross training, bit of different disciplines, different places to train. But every time you go back to approach your PB, it becomes harder. Yeah.
Mm.
And I think sometimes you need to kind of go, I might have hit the limit on that, or for the time being I have, or what do I try differently in the last half of the year to try and achieve something that at the moment, oh, it's been a, you know, not a washout, but it hasn't all gone to plan. Great. It won't all go to plan. That's the point. There are just plans. They are not gold, gilt-edged guarantees. They're just plans.
That's it. What's the thing?
Oh, thanks for that. That's a great backup.
But the thing is, with some people, is you approach every year as if it's always going to improve.
Yeah.
And some years you just get there and go, well, I don't know what happened there. You know, I did the same. I thought I was doing. If that's the case, that like you said, just readjust your goals the next year and go, right, well, instead of wanting to hit a, you know, 3:34-hour marathon, what I want to do is I want to take it back a bit and just say, well, look, you know, I want to finish in the top percent I'll have my age group, you know, and if that means running a, you know, a 4:05 or something like that, you know, then so be it. You know, you think to yourself, oh, get 4 anyway, but then just look at it and go, well, I've achieved that, so excellent, I've really enjoyed that, and then it steps on for the next year.
I had somebody sort of races in time trials, and they weren't as fast this year when they started, and they've kind of chipped away and they're not at their absolute best, but there are issues, and we know why, and it's not like everything should be right why is this not going to plan? We know there are big issues in the background. But interestingly, when you work it out a percentage-wise, this person's at, you know, 95 to 97% of their best.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, even if you're 95% of your best, that means you're only 5% off what you've ever done when everything has been right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're not...
You look at it like that.
Yeah, you're not at 50% of your best. It might feel like it because you're not not beating people you used to. But if you're at 95% of your best, you are clinging on to one hell of a lot of your potential ability. The worst thing you could do is throw the towel in and say, yeah, but I'm not quite as fast as ever was. But a PB isn't your average time. A PB is you on a good day and you on your best ever day.
Yeah.
And it might even be short course. Might even be, you know, exceptional weather or exceptional conditions that meant that you did a very good time. So sometimes people are even closer than 5% and they go, yeah, actually, I'm not that far off if you look at it in those terms. Oh, yeah. It seems as though, you know, a minute out of, you know, out of 21 minutes seems a lot of time, but it's not really, because the people that are doing 26 minutes aren't getting anywhere near you.
No, that's the thing.
It's just the people that you're used to being around and are ahead of you and you're behind them. But if you look at it in percentage terms, think, actually, I'm quite close. Then you can almost aim to think, OK, I wonder if I can get up to perhaps not my best, which is 100%. Perhaps I can get up to 97%, which if I'm that close, brilliant. Then maybe that gives me a chance of the following year, learning what went right and wrong this year, to get up to 98, 99 and 101% next year and beat myself by that last little bit.
That's the thing. Yeah. And it's never as bad. I know it, I'm exactly the same. It's never as bad as you always make it out to be like, oh, I don't know why I bother. I don't know why I bother with any of it. Yeah. And then you kind of look at the figures and you go, well, actually, I'm not that far off, am I really? Right. You know, even though you feel as though it's the end of the world, you just think, I put all this effort in and, you know, I'm 3% short. 3% is the difference between racing in the dry, you know, having a tailwind, you know, and just being on a good day, and it just might not have happened. That's all it was.
Yeah. But, so keep the faith. Race, do it clearly. I don't want everyone to sort of think that, you know, we're going soft on them. No, I love it when people PB, because the enthusiasm and the reward that they get is great. Or they just achieve a new distance. They've never done, you know, some people who did Austria had never done an Ironman before. And they were chuffed, and I sent them a text and said, yeah, I bet you're already working out how to get that next half an hour off. And they went, yep.
Yeah.
So there's always something that can be positive, but it does end up being an endurance game itself, as to sort of thinking, you know, I want to get through the whole season. I want to learn from this year and not be making plans for next year in July. It's like, come on. You know, you might have your big goal, but don't write off July, August and September just because May and April and maybe even June has been a little a little bit like, you know, well, perhaps you were too optimistic. Perhaps you forgot how hard it was to get back to where you were. And then you look back year on year and go, yeah, it's hard to get back to just be me on a solid day, let alone me on a good day. Yeah. Me on a good day. Yeah. Everything's got to be right. And if everything isn't right, do not expect that you can just put it in a vacuum and go off and do your racing. It will affect you, very much so. And therefore, you have to be realistic of what's going on around you, does affect your racing, does affect your ability to train, and should be not an excuse, but something you take into account. And if it's a big life event and there's things that do happen at times that affect people, just say, okay, that happens.
Yeah.
You know, shift happens.
This is it.
That's silence there, Martin. Right.
Silence not good for radio.
Silence not good for radio. Thank you once again for downloading and listening to this podcast. We really, really, really appreciate any feedback, any questions. We'll be recording at the end of this month for the August edition. So please either send your questions in via tweets or click contact@coachjoebeard.com. Newsletter's just gone out. If you want one, please sign up via, again, coachjoebeard.com. Facebook page, where there's a... where we do some chatting about bits and pieces, and your reviews and ratings at iTunes. I'm still working on that Crocker t-shirt. I think we should do those, Crocker. Yeah, I think so. Definitely think so.
A picture of my ugly mug like that. Winking. That's not good on radio, is it? Winking, really?
Yeah, winking doesn't work on radio. And also one of your Confucius says at the bottom.
Crocus says.
No. So yes, it's mid-season, the tour is on, all the big Ironmans, the triathlons, the World Championship qualifiers, the sprints, the big sportifs, you know, the everything is going on at the moment. If there is one weekend where there isn't, you know, 10 or 15 people doing stuff that I know of or coach that are doing something all over the planet, you think endurance sport is absolutely going bonkers.
It is. And remember, you do it for a reason. There's a reason, because you enjoy it as well.
Thanks, Martin.
So don't stress out. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And you worrying about it on race day, unfortunately, just isn't going to make it any better or any worse. So
yeah.
Go forth.
The sun will still come up the following day.
This is it.
Well, it might do if we're lucky.
Yeah. Good luck.
So train smart, race even smarter, and have fun. Martin, you want to say something at this point? It doesn't work if you just do signs.
Oh, right.
Just say something.
Enjoy. Welcome, everybody, to the 187,000th podcast. I'm Martin Crock, and today I'm joined by a man that you all might know, Lenny Henry. Awful beard, isn't he? Awful beard.
Thanks, Crocker. Is mine working?
Two.
It is if I turn it on.
I didn't know I had to
there
look at that.
There we go. Don't touch the screen.
There's a hair.
Good.
Two.
Mine's not. Test. Tear. Just didn't seem to be picking up very well.